Chapter 25. Torin. Torin took his sword and rammed it a few times into the snow. Yes, that felt good. If anything could feel good, that was. Torin only knew that using a sword felt natural to him, just like he was happier to be called he rather than it or thing. Was it because Aaron had named him? Questions like that made the skeleton's head hurt, but now he was about to do something that required less thought and more action. He was going to kill things. It needed to be done. Torin had to become stronger. He was currently a level 14 skeleton warrior, thanks to the battle with the enchanted suit of armor, but that wasn't nearly good enough. Torin had seen Rags's tribe fighting, seen Relk in the Antinium and Skinner in the hordes of undead. He could tell how weak he was compared to all of them, so he was determined to gain strength. But where to kill monsters? Torin paused as he sheathed the sword at his side and stared blankly around the plains. He didn't see any monsters besides a rock crab hiding in its shell in the distance, and it would pulverize his bones in a single strike. Ah, this could be a problem. Torin had to think for a while before he figured out where he needed to go. The watch kept the area around Lyskor clear of most monsters, and the roads north were generally safe because trade had to flow. Only secluded areas like Rags's secret dungeon entrance produced the occasional threat. If you wanted to fight around here in the winter, you'd have to jump in a shield spider pit or build a snowman. But Torin knew that the south was different. That way led to the blood fields, or so Ryoka had told Aaron, and different monsters lurked there. That was good. Torin now knew where he needed to go, but now he faced a different problem. How could he get there and back before Aaron called for him? He must obey orders. Fortunately, Torin had a solution for that, too. He knew Aaron. Not in the sense of knowing what she liked, or her personality, or hopes, or dreams, or anything like that, but he knew how she tended to react. The young woman was busy investigating the fairy flowers that had been left in her inn with Saria when Torin walked back in. She'd recovered from the hallucinations, and now she was busy talking with Saria about pots and planting things. Torin didn't care. He stealthily edged around the room, taking care not to attract attention. That was the thing. Torin might be a moving skeleton with purple eyes made of flame, but he was also not a person. Like a coat rack or a chair, he could become part of the room simply by standing in one place and stealthily moving a few feet every hour or two. It was also because he had a valuable skill. Torin wasn't nearly as high level as Aaron, but he'd still gained a few useful skills from the various classes he'd gained. He had weapon proficiency sword, lesser strength, conceal presence, and a few other skills from his classes, but those were the three valuable ones. Lesser strength, in particular, had been a gift. Torin had received it when he hit level 10 in the warrior class. It was conceal presence Torin used here, though. He silently moved across the room until he was right behind Aaron and Saria. Then he waited.
Don't you see? They're valuable. If we plant these, I bet I could grow more.
Aaron was talking excitedly to Saria, gesturing at the golden flowers. The half-elf looked unconvinced, but she nodded anyways.
If you think so. It's winter, but they don't seem to be dying. And of course, the fairies brought them, so they must be resistant to cold. I can help with the replanting, but we'll need some pots.
Pots? No problem. I think I have...
Aaron turned, and only then realized Torin was right behind her. She screamed and punched at him. Torin jumped back reflexively. He'd expected that.
Torin!
Saria had her skeletal hand on her heart as Aaron panted and glared at the skeleton. He didn't see what the big deal was, but she always got surprised and upset when she turned around in the middle of the night and saw him staring at her.
Oh, Aaron, your skeleton is terrifying.
I know. Okay, fine. Torin, go into the kitchen and get me a pot. Not a cooking pot, a pot for planting things.
Torin nodded and went into the kitchen. He didn't want to help with planting flowers, but this was all part of the process. This time he grabbed an old, dented iron pot and came back out just as quietly. Erin and Saria were talking again, but then Erin remembered the pot and turned her head. Torin stared into her eyes. Torin held out the old pot. Erin took a few steps back, snatched the pot, and shouted at him.
Stop that! What is with you today?
The skeleton had no ability to answer, but he'd come to understand that Erin wasn't really asking. He waited patiently.
Go stand over there!
Erin pointed to the bar, and Torin walked over obediently. All part of the plan. He kept watching as Erin and Saria began talking about soil and proper lighting conditions and things he cared nothing about. And then it happened. Saria caught sight of him and shuddered. She paused, moved a few feet, and shuddered again. Erin looked up.
Ugh, is it Torin again? What's he doing now?
Look.
The half-elf pointed, and Torin saw his master poke her head up from her pot. She had a smudge of dirt on her cheek. He stared at her patiently.
I don't see...
Oh, watch this.
Saria walked a few feet and picked up a wooden spoon they were using as a spade. At first, the skeleton's head didn't move. Then, slowly, it moved to track Saria. The half-elf moved back, and there was that slight delay before Torin's head slowly rotated back to stare at her some more. Erin shuddered with Saria. She put one hand on her face and swore as she got dirt in her eyes. She rubbed at her eyes and glared at Torin.
Ah, that's it! Out! Shoo! Don't come back until later! And stop being creepy! Understand?
That was what Torin had been waiting for. The skeleton didn't smile, but he instantly nodded and moved toward the door before Erin could change her mind. He heard the girl grumbling, but paid no heed. He was free! Torin sped out the door and into the snowy plains. Yes, he was free, and he only had to come back later that evening, or that night, or tomorrow, although he sensed that Erin probably only meant for him to be gone a few hours. Regardless, it had worked. Torin had long ago realized that if he kept standing behind Erin or getting in her way, she would eventually order him outside. He'd never made use of that knowledge, except to carefully avoid doing just that, because he hadn't ever had a reason to leave her side. Until now. Torin walked and then ran out into the floodplains of Liscor and then beyond it. He did not tire. He did not slow. He was undead, and death had long ago taken pain and exhaustion from him. Ryoka could run faster, so could Val, Relk, and probably even Erin if she was being chased by goblins. Torin had to carry his sword, so that made him slower, but he didn't stop, and so, in that respect, he was superior to most city runners like Garia, Pursua, or even Fals. Even so, it took Torin over an hour to move past the floodplains. He could tell he'd left because he reached a hill. It had quite a gentle incline, but it took Torin nearly 30 minutes to run to the top at full speed. And when he got to the top, he realized that there was a narrower gap on the hill he could have crested in half the time. Torin didn't get mad. He was incapable of it. He just marked the spot mentally so he would have a quicker route next time. Now that Torin was on top of the large hill, he could finally see down the long stretch of land that led south, towards the lands drakes and gnolls inhabited. It was nothing special, at least to Torin. He only noted that this place at least was truly a plain. The floodplains were indeed quite flat in places, but in others they had so many valleys and hills like where the Wandering Inn stood that flat ground became an illusion at best. But here, beyond the boundaries of Liscor, Torin saw the wilderness begin. He saw snowy ground, rocks, and trees. Yes, trees. At first, Torrin had assumed these were the same kind of trees he'd found earlier, the boom trees that exploded with deadly force. But no, these trees were normal coniferous trees, pines and evergreens forming large forests in between the open expanse of land. It was a pretty sight, but the skeleton had no time for any of it. He scanned the landscape, searching for hints of movement, and then he saw a small shape moving far below. That was enough. Torrin raced down the hill, drawing his sword as he ran. He didn't bother with stealth or plans. There was something alive, and so he was going to kill it. He wanted to kill it. A skeleton running down a snowy hill is hard to spot, even with all the snow flying about. But the creature had spotted Torrin already, and instead of running, it had stopped and waited for him to approach. That was a good sign. It meant it could probably fight. Torrin halted as he finally laid eyes on the creature that had been ambling through the snow. It was a deer. Yes, a deer. This was, in fact, a reindeer, and although it had an impressive set of horns, it was still just a deer, and not a flesh-eating kreller or a giant bug with teeth, or even a goblin. Disappointed, Torrin lowered his sword and turned away. Killing things, that was fine, but he was aware that random acts of violence wouldn't help him level. He turned his back, and thus took the reindeer's charge straight to the back. The impact knocked Torrin off his feet, and the hooves trampled and crushed his bones. If he had been flesh and blood, Torrin probably would have pierced internal organs and countless torn ligaments. But since he was a skeleton, the reindeer's charge was mostly harmless to him. Torrin sprang to his feet as the reindeer aborted its charge before it could hit a tree and turned, snorting, to face him. He lifted his sword and clattered his jaw in delight. It was an enemy after all. He nearly rejoiced and only then realized that he might actually be in a bit of trouble. Because here was the thing. Yes, Torrin was facing a reindeer. And yes, it had just charged him to little effect. But only now did the skeleton realize that this particular reindeer, whether by mutation or evolution, was twice the size of a reindeer from Aaron's world. He didn't have any other reindeer for comparison, of course. Torrin was just aware that this deer was huge. It was a chorus deer, although Torrin had no way of knowing that. The two antlers on the reindeer's head were colored as much orange as brown, and there were sooty marks on the fur around the chorus deer's hooves. Still, it didn't have a sword. Torrin raised his and charged at the deer, slashing viciously at its sides. The deer reared up, and Torrin saw flashing hooves. It kicked him in the skull and landed several good blows on his body, which cracked bone. He slashed its side open. Red blood covered the reindeer's side as it made a distress sound and retreated. Torrin advanced, charging through the snow with his sword raised, but the chorus deer was agile and darted away from him, easily outdistancing the skeleton. Well, now this was inconvenient. If Torrin had flesh, he would have frowned. He'd come out this far to fight monsters, not overly territorial animals. He expected the deer to run and decided he would let it go. It wasn't much of a challenge. When the deer suddenly stopped and lowered its head for another charge. Torrin paused and then raised his sword. The deer wanted to die, apparently. He had no problem with that. He waited patiently as the deer pawed the ground, snorting. It might be stronger and faster than he was, but it was just a dumb animal. No threat at all. Then Torrin learned what made the chorus deer different from normal reindeer. The deer's horns began to glow, and they lit up like pieces of iron in a forge fire, turning nearly white with the heat they emitted. The hooves caught fire, too. Suddenly, Torrin was aware that everything was melting around him. That didn't bother him, as he was a skeleton, but he had to wonder what would happen if his bones met the superheated horn. He hesitated for a second, and the chorus deer suddenly charged. It kicked off the ground with an explosion of fire, and it was suddenly moving faster. A lot faster. Torin threw himself out of the way as the deer thundered past him. He felt the air change around his bones, but then he was clear. For a second. He turned, and somehow the reindeer had turned and was already charging. Too late to block or evade. Torin cut at the deer again as the horns caught him full on in the chest. The deer veered to one side, bleeding from the face as Torin crashed back into the snow. But the horns still hit Torin's ribs. The skeleton heard a hiss and felt part of his ribcage disappear. He fought to get to his feet and felt at his ribs. They were still intact, but a good chunk of his bones had been vaporized. As Torin felt at his third rib down, he encountered only air where bone should have been. Bits of ash flaked away at his touch. The deer had burnt away his bones with the intense heat coming from its horns. That wasn't bad. Torin's mobility was still unhindered, and he hadn't lost much, and he'd hurt the chorus deer. It was now bleeding from two places, but something else concerned Torin. He was not healing, or if he was, it wasn't as rapidly as broken, shattered bone. That was very bad. The chorus deer was shaking its head, sending steaming droplets of blood flying into the snow. It was wounded right above the eye, and Torin was sure it couldn't see out of it. Still, it raked the air with its glowing horns, forcing Torin to retreat. He hopped backwards in the snow, and the two regarded each other warily for a few seconds. The skeleton considered his next move. He had to kill the deer now. That was plain, but he was more wary of the horns. Charging them might not be so bad, but if the deer pinned him and drove its horns into his body, he'd be ash in less than a minute. The deer was certainly having second thoughts as well. She'd been trying to chase off the strange intruder who'd entered her grazing spot, and already it had injured her twice. Either skeleton or chorus deer might have decided the risks here weren't worth the reward. But that was when the snowman attacked. Torin had only a second's warning as the massive shadow engulfed him before a snowy fist smashed into him, engulfing the skeleton in a world of snow. He struggled, but snow was everywhere, and it was too thickly packed for him to move. For a few minutes, all was confusion for Torin. He was fighting to move and could sense he was being swung around at great speeds. But then he heard a hiss and a roar, and the ice around him melted into water. Torin fell out of the snowman's body just in time to see the chorus deer springing away as part of the massive snow golem turned to water and mixed with the snow on the ground. He scrambled away and saw his sword still embedded in the snowy giant's side. Torin stared at the huge creation in amazement. It was a snowman, a crude sculpture of snow come to life. Technically, he was a drake, but his appearance had mutated too much to resemble his creator or any humanoid species, for that matter. A while ago, perhaps near the start of winter, a drake child had made a snowman in the fresh snow. The energetic young drake had given the snowman eyes made of pebbles, long sticks for arms, and a tail, a mouth, and even a radish for a nose, but had forgotten the most important thing. Clothes. Unprotected from the external sources, magic had entered the snowman, whether by accident or on purpose, and he had come to life. It might not have been that bad at first. For all the snowman was hostile to everything living, it wasn't fast, and it was made of loosely packed snow, after all. Hardly a threat. But this one had managed to survive its creation, and it had done what all creatures do. It grew. The snow on the plains was a banquet for the snow golem, and it had absorbed more and more snow until it was taller than a rock crab and just as wide across. It had two massive arms made of snow, and large rocks and stones had formed two crude eyes and a mouth on its face. Oh, and it still had a tail of sorts, but it was more like a third leg. The snow golem roared again and swung at the deer. The horns met the fist, and Torin saw a flash and then a cloud of steam billow up as the golem reared back, cradling his melted hand. Something exploded, and Torin realized some of the stones caught in the golem's body were overheating when the antlers caught them. That wasn't a problem for him or the golem, but the deer caught some of the shrapnel from the rocks and staggered. That was the golem's chance to throw a huge clump of himself at the deer, but it vaporized and became water as the deer lowered its head protectively. The force still threw the chorus deer on the ground, but it staggered upright and the two creatures began to circle each other. They'd completely forgotten about Torin. These two natural enemies were so engrossed in each other that only when the skeleton had climbed all the way up to the golem's head did the chorus deer notice he was there. It paused, and the snow golem finally realized something was wrong. It raised its only good hand, but Torin just clung to the massive snowy head, and the clumsy fingers couldn't pull him out. That was the chorus deer's cue to dart forwards, and the snow golem had to focus on the ground. Torin stood back up and looked at the golem's head. Now, how would you kill something made of snow and ice? Torin knew how he'd kill himself, so he applied the same logic to the golem. He didn't bother with his sword. He just buried his hands in the snow golem's head and began to dig. For a few seconds, the golem continued swiping at the deer as it ran around him below, melting his sides and darting in and out of reach. Then Torin tossed another armful of snow into the air and struck the golem's center. Then the golem knew pain. The snow golem roared in fury and agony as Torin dug down into its head, scooping out snow that looked different from the rest. It was somehow even whiter than normal snow, and it felt colder on his bones. The pure snow melted as soon as it reached the air, and the golem screamed as Torin kept digging into it. Slowly, the giant behemoth collapsed, and Torin realized it was coming apart. No longer bound by magic, the golem's body simply slumped to the ground, a small mountain of snow and dirt and ice. Torin sat up in the snow and pulled his sword out with him. Now that had been fun! He looked around quickly and saw the chorus deer was staring at the remains of the golem, as if unsure it was dead. It backed up as Torin leapt onto the ground, sword raised. Now, back to the fight. Torin waited for the deer to charge. It was clearly waiting for its moment, pawing the ground, feinting forwards. But then the deer hesitated. It raised its horns and shook them, but too late. The horns went out, the white-hot light and intense heat faded, and suddenly the chorus deer was just an oversized reindeer, bleeding and tired. Torin blinked, but the deer was just as surprised. It pawed at the ground, shaking its head, but it was clear that whatever magic or energy the chorus deer used, it had run out from fighting both Torin and the snow golem. Too bad, but Torin didn't mind. As the deer began to back up, he charged it, sword swinging. This time the deer met him head-on, raking the skeleton with its antlers, but they did nothing, and Torin stabbed the deer in the side. This time his blade went in several feet. It didn't hit the heart, but it did strike something vital, because the chorus deer moaned and pulled itself away. It didn't strike at Torin, but began to run as the skeleton chased after it. Even wounded, even half-blind, the reindeer instantly outdistanced Torin, but it left a trail of red in the snow and a wake besides. That was enough for Torin. He ran after the deer even as it pulled away, not discouraged by how fast it was moving. It would slow in the end. That was the thing about Torin. He was patient, and he didn't get tired. He pursued the wounded chorus deer relentlessly through the snow, cutting at its sides each time he drew near. It couldn't run forever, and each time it slowed, there he would be, stabbing at it, cutting it, ignoring the hooves and horns that smashed into him time and time again. Blood ran into the chorus deer's eyes as it surged towards a forest, trying to lose the skeleton. He ran after it, but then the chorus deer made a mistake. Half blind, it never noticed the low-hanging tree branches and ran straight into them. Torin clattered his jaw with delight as the deer careened left and into a tree. The skeleton was on the wounded animal in a second. The chorus deer raised its horns and knocked the sword out of the skeleton's hand. It tried to use that moment to run, but Torin was on it in an instant. He put two fingers together and pushed them into the deer's other eye. The deer screamed, and Torin felt delighted. This was fighting. This was killing. This was what he had been made to do. The world became a small, concentrated bubble of violence for the skeleton. He punched and bit and battered the deer as it tried to kick him with its hooves or stab him with its horns. But there was no heat. No heat, and the deer was weakening. Dying. Torin found his sword and brought it back as the deer lay on the ground, hooves moving weakly. He stabbed the deer in the chest and then the head, repeatedly, painting the snow and his bones with gore. It was done. He had won. Torin regarded the steaming corpse and then took a bit of snow and began to clean himself. Aaron hated it when he was dirty.
Skeleton warrior, level 16. Skill, even footing obtained.
Torin couldn't sleep, and he never rested, so the level-up notifications always appeared in his head the instant a battle was done or a game of chess was finished. He considered the words as he finished rubbing himself with snow. Even footing? It didn't sound that useful, but Torin lifted a foot experimentally. He began to walk through the snow and realized the ground was suddenly far, far easier for him to traverse. How? It was as if instead of landing on slick patches of ice or divots in the ground, he was walking on a smooth, hard surface rather than treacherous terrain. That was useful, not just for killing things. Torin was sure he'd be able to go wherever he liked with this skill. It was definitely handy, but it was odd. Odd, yes, that was the only word for it. Just a while ago, Torin had been worried about not moving fast enough, and lo and behold, he'd suddenly gotten a skill that allowed him to do just that. Was thinking and leveling connected in some way? Perhaps. Torin didn't know, but he could see the connection, and yet, useful as this new skill was, it wasn't quite what he needed. It would still take Torin over an hour and a half to get back to the inn, even if he didn't slip every few minutes. Speaking of which, Torin glanced at the sky and noted the position of the sun. Yes, he had to return anyways, or it would be dark by the time he got back. No more killing for today. It was inconvenient, but he had orders. The skeleton began to run back towards Lascaur and the inn through the snow, as if he'd never been fighting. The mound that had been the snow golem and the slowly freezing corpse of the chorus deer lay on the ground, to be slowly covered as more snow fell from the sky. Torin ran on, thinking only of Aaron, the inn, and the levels he had gained. He'd killed two new enemies today. Probably the reason why he'd leveled twice. The snow golem was a true threat. If he hadn't been melted out of it, he might have been trapped there forever. He wondered what he might kill tomorrow. That was Torin's first day of hunting. It was not his last, but when he returned to the inn, he found something new. A girl. She was sitting in the middle of Aaron's inn, on a chair, shivering in a blanket as Aaron fussed over her. The girl had a cup of warm and expensive milk and a plate of hot beef and bread besides. And she was complaining.
Filthy peasants and monsters! They should all be wiped out!
Torin stared. She was probably a guest. Probably. But he had an uneasy feeling, made worse when Aaron looked around and saw him.
A Oh, Torin! There you are. I was wondering where you were. Look, this is my new employee. Her name is...
Torin didn't hear the rest. He looked at the shivering girl, dressed in filthy clothes and staring at him with open-mouthed horror. He looked at Aaron. No. No, she couldn't be doing this. She was replacing him? Or, no, not replacing him. Torin listened as Aaron explained. She was going to work here, doing his jobs? Why? Wasn't he the only help Aaron needed? Was it because he'd left? Surely not. Aaron was saying something about the girl being rescued or exiled. Torin didn't quite understand. He didn't understand a lot of things that happened or that people said, but he looked at the girl and didn't like her. Not one bit. More things happened. Aaron began fussing over the girl, for one thing, although it appeared the girl was quite capable of fussing over herself. She made the other people who visited the inn angry. Torin saw that. The half-elf, his creator, and especially the gnoll shopkeeper. Was it important? Perhaps. Perhaps not. Torin only knew two things. He had leveled today, which was good, and Aaron was putting him in charge of the girl, which was bad. That first night, Torin stayed up late, thinking, trying to figure out if he was being replaced or if this was just punishment for something. He felt his ribs slowly beginning to restore themselves. The bones were reforming out of the air, but slowly, draining the mana within him by quite a bit. But it wasn't important like the new girl was. Torin ignored everything as he thought. He stood in the center of the common room until he noticed the girl sneaking downstairs. She didn't notice him as she snuck into the kitchen, but she did when he caught her hand as it was reaching for Aaron's pouch of coins. More screaming, more noise. Torin followed orders, and the next day he was left alone with the girl to supervise her. He stared at her in shock, but it was mirrored on her face with not a little revulsion and horror. He had to teach her? Aaron wanted the girl to learn how to clean, but all the girl did was back away from Torin, screaming insults and calling him names. He offered her the dust rag several times, but she just ran away from him. At last, she stopped being afraid of him enough to stand still and try to order him around. The girl planted her feet, opened her mouth petulantly, and pointed towards the door.
Thing, I order you to...
What was Torin supposed to do? He agonized over the problem. He couldn't kill the girl. He even had orders to protect her and show her the ropes, which sadly didn't mean hang or garrote her either. Okay, Torin could do that. He was good at following orders. It was just... The thing was,
he didn't care about the girl Aaron had hired. He did not. He didn't care that Aaron paid more attention to her than to Torin. He didn't care that the other girl was doing his job, albeit very poorly, and he especially didn't care that she was a worthless waste of flesh and space. She was just so tiresome. That was all. It was only that. Yes, only that. And she gave him orders, which were meaningless. They were just words. They didn't bother Torin at all. It was simply inconvenient, and Torin disliked the time he was wasting trying to teach her. But that all changed when Torin discovered he could do very enjoyable things to the girl when Aaron wasn't watching. It was fun, pleasurable even. First, he used fists and feet, and then fingers, and then he just had to push to have fun. He could stare, of course, but that wasn't nearly as entertaining. A distraction. In the end, that was all it boiled down to. After Torin discovered the fun that could be had from the girl and managed to get her to do some chores, it became less of his problem and more of Aaron's. Teaching the girl was a mandatory part of the day Torin resigned himself to, which was only punctuated by a few enjoyable moments. He did what Aaron asked of him,
But when she was done and the new girl was sniveling or hiding, he went out and hunted. The goblins were creeping through the snow, 10 of them, dressed in gray winter pelts of some animal. Torin watched them for a while, but they weren't part of Rags's goblins. He had seen them all, and they were coming from the south. He leapt up from the snow where he'd been lying, almost invisible, and ran the first one through. The second he grabbed and strangled with one hand as he began to slaughter the rest. They couldn't hurt him, not without magic or enough force to scatter his bones or grind them to dust. One of them tried to cast a spell, but Torin hacked him to bits before he could finish. The wolverine hunted through the snow, searching for something he could kill. He took a step and slipped on something smooth. Torin opened his jaws and bit upwards. A shame he didn't have a drake or gnoll's teeth. The second choristeer went down far more easily than the first. Torin had taken to carrying a small hatchet, one of the weapons he'd liberated from dead adventurers in the ruins, and he threw it and scored a deep cut on the deer's leg. It was easy to kill then. Torin ran forwards and cut at it from behind, evading the hooves with ease. But this time, he miscalculated. The chorus deer that had wandered too far from the herd was nevertheless within sight of them, and as Torin butchered the animal, the rest of the herd thundered towards him. The skeleton heard a groan, or perhaps some kind of call, and then he realized he was surrounded. But Torin just raised his sword and wondered how many of them he could kill. The chorus deer's horns began to glow white-hot, and then the wind picked up. Torin glanced across the plains and saw that the wind had kicked up a cloud of freshly fallen snow. It blew towards Torin and the herd of reindeer, a wave of ice, but as it hit the deer's glowing horns, the snow suddenly became steam. They had been waiting for that. Even as the blinding steam rushed past Torin, the chorus deer charged at him, dark shapes and burning horns and hooves in the haze. Torin ran at them, howling silently. The first charge knocked him off his feet, but then he was among the herd, slashing, stabbing, tearing. The deer stampeded around him, and Torin felt his bones turning black and catching fire from the heat. The deer were clustered around the skeleton, swiping with their horns, heedless of the heat which somehow didn't set fire to their own thick hides, when suddenly, as one, they turned and fled. Torin lay on the ground, bones still smoking, and stared at the herd as they raced away across the plains. He'd nearly forgotten about the Gem of Terror, but it had its uses. It was half a day before he could walk again, but he leveled up from that battle all the same. The wild boar wasn't one of the ones herded by shepherds of Lascaur. He was an alpha among his pack, and he led them through the snow, foraging for edible food in this frozen landscape. In the summer, of course, they shed their fur. But right now, they needed all the warmth they could get, so the herd huddled together. Not just for the body heat, of course. The boars were weak individually, especially given the numerous deadly monsters living on the plains. But together, their tusks and explosive power could gore all but the deadliest enemies. Still, this boar was taking his herd further south, away from Lascaur. True, the threats in the south were just as bad. Rock crabs and shield spider nests might be dangers around Lascaur, but deadly tribes of gnolls and other monsters like wyverns would slaughter even a group as large as his. But the alpha boar had made up his mind. His pack had just passed a freshly slaughtered monster, a tall, semi-bipedal creature with leathery skin and no face. It had only a mouth and no eyes, but its long talons and barbed forearms more than made up for its lack of sight. It was a formidable enemy that was twice as tall as the alpha boar, and yet it had been brutally hacked apart. It looked like something had killed it, but not even stopped to consume it. What could be so dangerous? The boar snuffled, raising his snout to the air. His nose was just as good as his eyes at determining where threats lay. He called to the rest of his herd, and they followed him as he pushed a path through the snow. Torin let them go. He was running low on magic from Aaron, and he didn't think he could win against the boars without using the ruby gemstone. And he didn't level if he used that, or so it seemed. They were a gold-rank team that had arrived late to Liscor, late to the undead invasion, and too late to claim the best inns in the city, which was the most important thing. They weren't happy about it, but they could still rent an inn to themselves.
It beats staying at that little adventurer's guild they've got in the city, that's for certain.
Hallrock, their lead scout and marksman, complained as they rode on horses through the snow. He peered at the magical compass in his hands and stared at the snowy landscape ahead before motioning the group forwards.
I don't think they would have had room for us, even if we'd asked. Dead gods, what a city to come to. Are there no adventurers higher than bronze rank here?
A few, but the city doesn't need many. They have a strong watch.
That came from one of the two mages. Hallrock grunted at Typhonius irritably, not so much for the explanation as the mage's riding style. He was sitting uncomfortably on the horse, who was clearly not fond of the older man, nor the tight grip the mage took on the reins.
Well, that might be helpful for us. Less competition that way.
Hallrock pointed left, and the group skirted a shield spider nest. He kept looking around, but the other mage, a brown-skinned girl with stitch marks around her hands, neck, and knees, and a long robe, sighed irritably.
That's only for now. Already silver-rank adventurers and even some gold-rank ones are flooding into the city. Word's spreading about the dungeon underground, and even the undead invasion hasn't scared many off. Did you see the one talking to the paladin, and one with the hammer in the back? That's a silver-rank adventurer named Frostfox. She normally takes on missions solo, but even she's teaming up. Unless we get a jump on the others, we might be upstaged by a silver-rank team, or another gold-rank one. There's already two in the city.
Hallrock opened his mouth to reply, but their leader, a man with a great sword and magical armor, replied. His name was Ulrian, and Hallrock was even more concerned about his horse, which had to bear both the man, his sword, and his armor through the snow.
No worries. The guardian of the crypts that attacked the city was more than a match for any silver rank team, or even a group of them. How many joined up to crack open that place? 4, 5, and they were all slaughtered by the lesser guardian. Makes you wonder how we'll do.
Hallrock muttered the words under his breath, but his three companions didn't look worried. And in truth, he understood Ulrian's unspoken point. Silver rank groups might team up as much as they wanted, but even 100 silver rank teams wouldn't be able to match the magical items and abilities of a gold rank team.
What about named adventurers? If some of them arrive...
If some arrive, we'd better have a good foothold in the dungeon already. Which is why we need to find the entrance, Hallrock.
Revy glared at Hallrock and looked at the magical compass in his hands pointedly. He opened his mouth to retort. He and Revy got along least well, but he turned his focus back to his task instead.
We're close to the center of the magical disturbance, but there's nothing but snow and dirt around for miles.
Oh, damn. Another false trail. Should we just start digging and hope we hit a wall or something?
Typhonius sighed loudly and pointedly at the two non-mages as he pulled on his horse's reins to make it stop.
Even if you wanted to dig however far down it is to the dungeon, I doubt you'd be able to blast through the walls without a serious amount of effort. Frankly, I don't believe I could do it even with Revy's help. No. We need to find an opening in the earth, or a surface tunnel. The compass should flash when it detects an opening of some kind.
It's flashed 5 times already today, each time over a sealed spider nest.
Holrock snapped back at Typhonius, irritable and cold. He pointed at the distant mountains looming over the plains.
It might be the entrance is in one of those damn mountains, don't you think? And if that's the case, we better join up with other teams as well, because the high passes are not a place for a single gold-ranked team to go exploring alone. And stop gripping those reins so tight. You're hurting your mount.
Calm down, Holrock. We bought these mounts outright. It's not like we're hurting the animals too badly. We've got potions if they need it, and we need to get a drop on the others. Let's keep searching.
The scout scowled, but he gently nudged his horse into a walk again. He knew he was being irritable. Well, more so than usual, but they'd been traveling day and night to get here before the others. The message spell Revy had received from Lescore had told them of the dungeon and its possible riches, and that was enough to motivate them to make the 1,000-mile journey.
All right. Let's head towards that forest over there. Odds are the entrance is buried behind all those trees or underground.
Holrock began to ride in that direction, but raised his hand just as quickly. The other 3 adventurers stopped as he squinted across the plains. His vision was far greater than normal, and so he was the first one to see the undead.
Is that a skeleton fighting a snow golem?
Revy frowned as the group slowly drew closer to the odd sight. Yes, in the distance, a lone skeleton was exchanging blows with a snow golem of roughly the same height. It was an uneven fight. Holrock could already tell the skeleton was going to win. It had speed, reach, and strength on the snow golem, and even as he watched, the undead creature speared the golem through its vulnerable head.
Now there's a sight. Do you suppose it's one of the undead left over from the attack on the score?
Typhonius shook his head again. He gestured at the skeleton as it stomped the golem into the snow and planted its sword in the snow.
Look how it moves. It's no ordinary skeleton. It must be a revenant of some kind.
Revenant? You mean a possessed undead? That's dangerous.
Holrock hated the undead. They were hard to kill with his arrows, and some, like ghosts, couldn't be harmed by normal weapons at all. It was part of the reason why he worked in a team. A mage was always useful when fighting those horrors. He'd already put an arrow to his bowstring when Revy grabbed his arm. He glared at her.
What?
Don't kill it. If it belongs to the city, we'll have to pay for its destruction.
Ulrian snorted in disbelief.
I've heard the local watch uses odd creatures, but an undead. Why else would it be attacking a snow golem?
Maybe the golem attacked first. Let me handle this.
Reluctantly, Holrock lowered his bow. Revy shot him a smile, which he did not appreciate or return, and opened a pouch on her belt. Holrock eyed the scrap of cloth the stitch girl pulled out suspiciously.
If you're just going to destroy it, let me—
I'm not going to destroy the skeleton. I'll capture it. If it belongs to the city, we can return it. Otherwise, I'd love to know how strong the spirit bound to the corpse is.
And steal the spirit? I'm not having an undead following me around. It'll spook the horses.
Revy rolled her eyes as she held the scrap of cloth to the air. It was flesh-colored, much like the fabric that made up her body.
I'm no necromancer, as I've told you 1,000 times, Holrock. But I can use a spirit, especially if its memory of being alive is still strong.
Her hands began to glow, and Holrock uneasily moved his mount away from Revy as her voice deepened. She tossed the scrap of fabric into the air and spoke.
Arise, ancient warrior. Heed the call and return to fight once more.
A figure shimmered into being. He was a tall man, dressed in bronze armor, holding a mace and shield. His face was completely blank, but he snapped to attention as Revy spoke.
Capture that skeleton. Break his limbs if you must, but deliver the skull and torso to me intact. Go.
Instantly, the armored warrior shot off through the snow like an arrow. Hallrock had to admit he was impressed by the man's speed, even in armor. He seemed to leap from spot to spot, so that each step covered 10 feet as he closed with the skeleton. As the two began to fight, Hallrock eyed Revy.
I still don't understand how that's different from Revenants. They're spirits of dead people bound into bodies and forced to obey the caster. How's that different from your summons?
Revy scowled at him as Typhonius sighed loudly, and Ulrian shook his head. She was the newest addition to their team, Griffin Hunt, and he still wasn't used to her. Come to that, he'd be happier if they were still hunting griffins for pay. It was dangerous, but it wasn't unpredictable like exploring a new dungeon.
They're constructs, not ghosts or spirits. They bear some of the power of their previous bodies, but they don't have minds. I call them from the memory of souls past, but they're not the souls themselves. If they were, they'd be far stronger.
And that's your ancestor, is it?
Perhaps. Not all string people are related. His name was Kelthor, but he's only a shadow of the warrior he was in life.
Still strong enough to take on a lone skeleton, though. I hope you've got enough for when we fight a real enemy.
With any luck, I'll have another one soon enough. I can imprint the soul bound to that skeleton and let the spirit go, and then we'll all be happy.
Hallrock was never happy, but he watched as the skeleton began to fight with the summoned phantom anyways. His eyes traveled to the right, and he called out to Ulrian.
Corrastir, a herd of them. We best not get too close unless you want a real fight.
The big man nodded.
I see them. We're far enough away and upwind. The only risk is that Revy's pet warrior or the skeleton attract them.
If it comes to that, I'll recall the warrior or banish him on the spot. Stop worrying, Hallrock. Watch, the skeleton's nearly done.
It was true. A shadow of his past self, Kelthor's image might be, but he was still far stronger than a normal skeleton. Hallrock estimated he was around level 25, give or take a bit. Not enough for a gold rank with his poor equipment, but certainly the equal of any silver rank adventurer. He was bashing the skeleton mercilessly, and the undead was falling back, unable to strike back. Indeed, the armored man was still unharmed because every time the skeleton did try to attack, his sword would glance off the armor or shield of the man.
Ancient equipment? How old is this construct?
Oh, I got it from my grandmother. He's declined in power since she used him, but it's a testament to his original strength, and he's quite efficient.
Kelthor's phantom had caught the skeleton with a strike that knocked one arm clean off. The skeleton retreated now, running backwards swiftly as he deflected strikes. Hallrock cursed.
Damn, they're headed straight for the Corrastir herd.
Not if I can help it. Kelthor, stop the skeleton now.
It was impossible for Kelthor to have heard Revy's actual words at that distance, but he did, nevertheless. He sprinted at the skeleton, swinging his mace faster, and the skeleton... Hallrock felt the chill in his heart and nearly screamed out loud. Fear, pure and unrelenting, suddenly poured over him for a brief instant. Revy and Typhonius cried out, and Ulrian gritted his teeth. Kelthor suddenly paused and stumbled backwards, and the skeleton ran towards the Corrastir herd. The scout turned to the other adventurers, feeling the terrible terror gripping him dissipate as quickly as it had come. Ulrian fingered the protective stone at his chest, and Revy and Typhonius collected themselves as best they could.
What the hell was that?
The gem of terror had worked. Torin scrambled through the snow towards the herd of chorus deer, knowing he wouldn't get another chance to use it. The warrior that was alive and not alive had only paused when he'd used it, which meant he was probably resistant. And just as the skeleton thought that, the warrior with the mace and shield charged towards him again. He was so fast. He exploded through the snow, leaving a trail behind him as he dashed at Torin, mace raised. This time the skeleton stood his ground. He swung his sword and dodged back as the mace flew at him. Too slow, Torin felt himself being sent flying again. But this time he was close to the herd of chorus deer. They looked up as one of Torin's ribs flew through the air above their heads, and they began pawing the ground as they sensed intruders. Perfect. The warrior had paused, and Torin realized that the odd group of adventurers far away was probably controlling him. Slowly, he backed up out of the chorus deer's territory. Torin watched him go and looked around at the deer. They were igniting their horns, but not charging. Not yet, anyways. He slowly began to walk away from them as well, towards the armored warrior, which was death as well. But Torin moved slowly, because he was waiting. Waiting. They were almost out of range of the chorus deer when it happened. A gust of air blew snow up into the sky. Torin had been waiting for that. He ran at the other warrior, and the phantom man raised his mace. Torin knew he couldn't win. Not in a fair fight. But this fight was about to get less than fair, because as the snow blew in a cloud past the chorus deer, it turned to blowing steam and mist as it hit their horns. The blinding fog engulfed Torin and the phantom, and too late, the construct realized the danger. He couldn't see or even breathe that well in the hot, vaporous fumes, but Torin had memorized the man's position, and now he unleashed his gaze of terror as well. The man with the mace swung blindly, creating an arc of whirling metal around his head. He shifted, crouching low as he looked left and right, waiting for the steam to Torin's purple, flaming eyes appeared out of the steam, and his sword flashed forwards. His reassembled arm caught the mace, and bone shattered once more as his sword flashed past the warrior's neck. The slight gap where the armor met flesh parted as the sword cut through the ghostly skin. The man choked as blood spurted from the wound. Torin hadn't expected that, but the phantom was real enough, and he sank to his knees, gasping for air, dying. He looked up at Torin, and the skeleton thought he saw a smile cross the man's face before his body dissipated, leaving his weapon, shield, and armor behind in the snow. The steam vanished, and Torin was left alone as the chorus deer dimmed their horns and ignored the skeleton once again. He looked at the dented bronze armor, a relic from time long past. He reached down, and the arrow shattered his skull and sent Torin sprawling in the snow. Hallrock lowered his bow and looked at Revy. The female mage was fuming, her eyes hot with fury.
It was too close to the chorus, dear. If we went after it, it would only make the herd angry. You've already lost one summon, unless you can recover it.
No.
Revy said the word bitterly. She stared at the armor that was all that remained of Kelthor and shook her head.
Once they're dead again, they're gone. If he was just injured, I could restore him, but...
She clenched her teeth.
What a waste. Let's just go.
She turned, and Hallrock hesitated as he looked at the armor. It was lying in the snow next to the fallen skeleton.
Do you want to recover the plate? It's bronze, but it could be worth something.
Leave it. It's just low-quality armor anyways.
The adventurers left. Revy was in no mood to talk. Typhonius was saddle-sore, Ulrian was bored, and Hallrock had to keep looking for potential dangers as they continued exploring for the entrance to the dungeon below Lascaur. But the scout kept looking back at the skeleton. It hadn't been that strong, but it had been cunning. And what had that terror been? Some feature of the undead? Or a magical item? It was dead, though. It lay in the snow, unmoving. But then, why did Hallrock still feel uneasy? It took a long time before Torin was sure he wasn't being watched, and his skull was finally reassembled. He sat up in the snow and stared around. Well, he'd nearly died again, but he'd leveled up. A good trade, he felt. On cue, the notification began to read in his head, but with a pleasant surprise this time.
Skeleton Knight, level 20. Skill, Power Strike obtained. Skill, Weapon Proficiency, Shield obtained. Skill Change, Power Strike to Mirage Cut. Skill, Mirage Cut obtained.
He was a Skeleton Knight now? Was that different than a Skeleton Warrior? And did that mean he had the Knight class, or was that different from being a skeleton? Torin had no idea, but he looked at the metal armor in the snow and decided that whatever the mysterious message in his head was telling him, it was a good idea. The armor was cumbersome to don, but when it was on, Torin felt tough. Heavy and far slower, but tough enough to fight without needing to worry about being disassembled with each strike. He took the shield, but left the mace in the snow. He preferred cutting weapons anyways. It was a long and slow trek back to the inn. Torin was worrying how Erin would react when she saw the armor. Maybe he could hide it? It had never occurred to him to hide anything, or to trick her, rather. But it beat her asking questions. And, of course, it wasn't as if she owned the armor. It was Torin's. He'd won it. The annoying girl was probably going to be his responsibility when he got back. Torin dreaded that. Couldn't he slow down? Torin pondered all of this as he slowly walked back to the inn. Then his head snapped up. He saw the struggling shapes on the hill before he heard the sounds of fighting. Torin saw furred shapes, brown, gray, and black mainly, struggling around the inn, and several figures fighting. One held a sword, the others warded the gnolls off with magic, while one more had no weapons and was fighting with her fists. There was no time for thought, no time for action. Torin had no heart, but he felt a shock at his very core. Erin was in danger. Like her, hate her, he still had his duty. She was under attack, and that meant he would fight. Torin drew his sword and shield and charged.